Go casual, you go all the way casual. If you're going to go fancy, you go focaccia and pesto. Chris's laugh released some of the tension bunched in Nate's chest. God, it was good to hear her laugh. It felt like an eternity since their banter this afternoon before Roger showed up. Only goes to prove how fast life can change in the blink of an eye. They didn't speak again until they finished eating. It was a compatible, thoughtful silence, the kind that signaled one or both parties were thinking hard about something. Nate suppressed the urge to crack jokes to get Chris smiling again and let the quiet sit. Chris needed the processing time.
"Thank you," she said, helping him clear the table. "For coming with me to dinner. I know that was a lot to take in."
"Anytime. I mean that." Nate tossed the used paper towels into the trash can and eyed Chris with concern. "How are you feeling?"
"Like my head's about to explode."
She drained the rest of her water and rinsed the glass.
"This day did not turn out the way I thought it would."
"No kidding."
"I have so many questions left. Like where my mom, Aunt Mariana, went."
Chris stumbled over the terminology.
"Why she left? Why she sent that letter? And why Gemma is here now, after all these years? How'd she find me? Is it a coincidence we frequented the same cafe, or did she know who I was the entire time?"
"I don't want to assume anything," Nate said. "But I don't believe in coincidences."
"You don't strike me as a guy who believes in fate, either."
"I didn't," a lopsided grin. "Until I met you." Chris dropped her eyes, her hands shaking as she dried them with a dish towel.
"Don't say stuff like that."
"Why not?"
"Because."
She drew her bottom lip between her teeth, and it was all Nate could do not to grab her and kiss her senseless. Sometimes the hold Chris had on him and his emotions scared the shit out of him, but he wouldn't trade it for anything else in the world.
"I was sure I couldn't love you more than I already did, and I don't like being proven wrong."
His chest cracked open in the best kind of way, and this time, Nate gave in to his urges. He grabbed Chris and pulled her flush against him while his mouth plundered hers, stroking and teasing until she gasped little moans that turned him harder than steel. It was love and passion, yes, but also oblivion. He couldn't do much for her right now, except be there for her and help her forget, if only for a short while. Chris must have been on the same page because she arched against him with a desperation that wasn't entirely due to the lust thickening the air between them.
"Take me upstairs."
She nipped his bottom lip and steel turned into fucking titanium.
"Make me forget just for tonight. I can look for more answers tomorrow, but tonight..."
Another nip, another bolt of heat straight to his groin.
"I need to escape."
Instead of answering, Nate lifted her, wrapped her legs around his waist, and carried her upstairs to his room, where he gave her exactly what she asked for. It wasn't a slow, leisurely kind of night. It was hard and fast and knocked the breath out of their lungs, and he didn't stop until Chris collapsed in his arms, exhausted, and drifted asleep. Nate kissed her forehead and closed his eyes, wishing, not for the first time, that he had the power to slay nightmares.
Chapter 27. Chris stalled for as long as she could. She enticed Nate into sex again when they woke up, though it didn't take much enticing. And, unlike last night, their lovemaking was languid and sensual, filled with long kisses and soft caresses. By the time they got downstairs, Skylar had already left to meet her friends, and Michael was mowing the lawn. Judging by the surprised look on Nate's face when he saw his father tending to the front yard, Michael hadn't operated the lawnmower in quite a while. Chris convinced Nate to let Michael handle it. The elder Reynolds needed to prove to himself and to his children he could take care of things around the house on his own, and to allow her to make pancakes for breakfast. Gee, she set the pan on fire once when she tried cooking an omelet, and Nate acted like she would burn down the kitchen every time she stepped within 2 feet of the stove. Luckily, no pans caught on fire this time around. and Chris brandished the slightly burnt pancakes with triumph. "The burns are your fault," she said when Nate eyed the blackened flapjacks dubiously. "You distracted me with your kisses." The dubious stare morphed into a slow, panty-melting smile.
"I'd eat all the burnt pancakes in the world for one of your kisses."
To prove his point, he sawed off the darkest portion of his breakfast with a knife and popped it into his mouth. He even made chewing look sexy. "You and your damn charm," she grumbled while her heart pole-vaulted in her chest. "It's not fair." That earned her another smile. Nate could charm the panties off a nun with that grin of his, and he knew it. Chris set aside extra pancakes for Michael, who came into the house right as she and Nate were finishing up.
"Oh, I'll just reheat them after I freshen up,"
Michael said, when Chris realized the food had gone cold.
"No big deal." "Did the lawnmower give you trouble?"
Nate's brow furrowed.
"It can get tricky, especially near the corner by the sidewalk." "Yeah, I remember."
Michael bobbed his head.
"All good. What about the section by the fence? It's..." "Nate, I got it,"
his father said gently.
"Relax. Enjoy your Saturday with Chris. I'll take care of things around here."
Nate's frown deepened,
but...
Chris caught his eye and gave a subtle shake of her head. Nate pressed his lips together.
"All right. We should do something about the shed in the backyard, though. It needs a good clearing out. There are tools in there that don't even work anymore."
Michael paused, then added hopefully,
"Maybe we could do it together. Have a father-son chore day one of these days." A nervous chuckle. "I guess it doesn't sound too fun when I put it like that."
Chris sipped her juice and stayed silent. Nate and his father were making progress toward rebuilding the trust between them, but it would take a while before things were back to the way they used to be, if that was even possible.
"Sure," Nate said. "That sounds..."
He trailed off before repeating,
"Sure."
Michael looked like he'd just won a record jackpot.
"Great,"
he beamed.
"We can work out the details later."
Chris couldn't suppress a smile at the elder Reynolds' joy. The man practically floated out of the room. As much as a 53-year-old could float, anyway.
"I can't believe I just agreed to a day of chores with my old man," Nate said. "High school me would have been appalled."
"Don't lie. You're looking forward to it." He pointed a fork at her.
"Whose side are you on?"
"Yours, which is why I think you spending quality time with your dad is a good thing. Even if said quality time involves physical labor." Chris wrinkled her nose at the thought of all the dust and sweat. Although, a sweaty Nate wasn't necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, Nate grumbled.
He chewed and swallowed his last piece of pancake before he surveyed her with warm, sympathetic eyes.
"Speaking of dads, are you ready to see yours?"
A heavy block of dread dropped into the pit of her stomach. "No, but I'd rather get it over with." Chris fiddled with her bracelet. "Just like ripping off a Band-Aid, right?"
"Right," Nate confirmed. "And if you need me, I'm a phone call away."
She nodded. She was not looking forward to her first conversation with her father post-bombshell, but it had to be done. She couldn't stall forever. 40 minutes later, Chris found herself staring at her family's Beverly Hills home. Her father and Gloria were inside those walls. The block of dread multiplied when she sat frozen in Nate's car, tempted to call the whole thing off and hit the beach instead. Avoidance, the answer to life's problems. Chris had avoided thinking about the implications of yesterday's revelation so far. And she'd like that to continue, thank you very much. Sorting through her emotions regarding her real mother, her parents' twisted history, and her aunt-slash-fake-mom's out-of-the-blue betrayal required more time and therapy than she cared to commit to. She'd grown up her entire life thinking her mom had abandoned her, And she had, in a way. But she'd been so hung up on the abandonment, she'd never given much thought to what would happen if her mother reappeared in her life. And she'd certainly never thought about what she might do if she found out her real mother wasn't who she thought she was. "Come inside with me," Chris gripped Nate's hand, letting his warm strength ease her nerves. He didn't argue. He simply nodded and followed her to the front door. Chris rang the doorbell, already regretting her breakfast decision. The pancakes and butter and maple syrup churned in her stomach, and she might hurl into that flower pot. The door flew open. Risa, the housekeeper Roger had hired to keep the mansion in acceptable shape throughout the year, didn't remark on her boss's daughter's one-week absence from the household. But her relief was apparent. She ushered them in and lured Nate to the kitchen with promises of homemade banana bread while Chris headed for her father's office. It didn't matter the house or location. You could almost always find Roger in his office. "Call me if you need anything." Nate pressed a quick kiss to her lips before they parted ways. God, she loved that man. Having Nate nearby provided Chris with the strength she needed to put one foot in front of the other without upchucking into the nearest antique vase. By the time she arrived in front of her father's study, the block of dread had shrunk by about 2 millimeters. The door was ajar, but she knocked anyway and waited for her father's, "Come in," before she entered. Roger stood in front of the floor-to-ceiling windows overlooking the back of the estate, a glass of pale brown liquid in hand. He wore a charcoal sweater and jeans, and tufts of dark hair stuck out like he'd woken up on the wrong side of the bed. Stress and exhaustion carved deep grooves in his face.
"Chris,"
his low voice rumbled over her, and for some inane reason, she wanted to cry. "Daddy." They stared at each other, the air between them heavy with broken promises, unearthed truths, and remaining secrets. They had a lot to talk about.
After 1 hour, 23 minutes, and 39 seconds of Nate doing nothing except staring, pacing, and hoovering Reese's delicious banana bread, 4 things happened in rapid succession. 1, Nate ran out of bread to eat. 2, Gemma showed up looking for bread, Roger, and Chris, not necessarily in that order. 3, Chris and Roger showed up. The former nearly fell over when she saw Gemma, while the latter asked for, aka demanded, a chat with Nate. 4. Nate received 3 back-to-back phone calls from Marty, which he ignored because he had enough drama in his life right now without arguing with his cousin/agent over whether to audition for some shitty straight-to-DVD movie that would probably do Nate's career more harm than good. "Sorry there's no more bread." Nate stared woefully at the empty loaf pan on the kitchen island. "I ate it all." "Jesus," Roger said. "All of it?" "That's okay," Gemma assured Nate. "I didn't really want the bread. I just wanted something to calm my nerves." She darted a glance in Chris's direction. Chris crossed her arms over her chest. Red rimmed her eyes and tipped her nose, like she'd been crying. A wave of fierce protectiveness swept over Nate. He wanted to hug her into his arms and shield her from anything that might make her cry. Her mom's, her dad, Gloria, that ugly green sweater that made her recoil when she saw it at the outdoor flea market he took her and Skylar to the other day. Since Chris was standing next to her father, who frowned at Nate like Nate had just announced he'd tested positive for STDs and was intent on spreading it to the older man's daughter, he stayed where he was. That didn't stop his heart from aching. This whole situation was so fucked up. Nate's phone buzzed with another call. "Damn it, Marty." Roger's frown deepened, and an irritated Nate silenced his phone. A second later, his screen lit up with a text message. "Marty, call me. It's urgent." All caps, 3 exclamation marks. Nate would have been concerned, except the last time he'd received a similar message from his cousin, Marty had needed a double date partner for the blonde twins he'd met at the Grove. Needless to say, Nate didn't take Marty's all caps, 3 exclamation marks messages all that seriously. "What are you doing here?" Chris asked Gemma. Her voice, while not unfriendly, oozed wariness. Gemma fiddled with her bracelet, and Nate realized Chris had the same tick when she was nervous or distressed. "I asked her to come." Roger cleared his throat. "We have a lot of unanswered questions from last night, and I thought we should wrap those up after we had time to sleep on everything."
"Chris, do you mind if I speak with you alone?" Gemma asked softly.
Chris's shoulders visibly tightened. Her eyes darted from her father to Gemma to Nate, who gave her what he hoped was a reassuring smile. Gemma seemed like a decent person, but if she hurt Chris, he was going to have it out with her. He was sick to death of shitty parents.
"Okay,"
Chris nodded in response to Gemma's question. Relief spread across the other woman's face.
"Okay,"
she repeated. Nate forced himself not to follow as Chris and her biological mother disappeared into another part of the house, leaving him and Roger alone. Shit. Nate wished he hadn't eaten all the banana bread. A slice of that heavenly goodness would have gone a long way toward easing the scowl on the Carrera patriarch's face. Or not. There was a strong possibility Roger's features had frozen into a perpetual disapproving grimace. "I don't like you," Roger said. "Damn. Talk about cutting to the chase." "Yes, you made that pretty clear when you tried to bribe me into breaking up with your daughter," Nate said, equally blunt. No point in trying to kiss ass. It wouldn't get him anywhere anyway. "Let me finish," Roger growled. "I don't like you, but I appreciate how you've looked after Chris these past few days." He choked out each word like it was a shard of glass slicing his throat open on its way out. "I know about the cafe and her living at your house," he added when he saw Nate's surprise. "I put someone on her tail when I found her note saying she was moving out for the rest of the summer. She's my daughter, and I won't let anything happen to her. That being said, I still think you two aren't well suited. You're too different, and that's not even taking into account your past activities. But I can tell you genuinely care for her, and Chris cares for you too." More grimacing. "So I'm willing to step aside and allow you two to stay together for however long this thing between you lasts." Nate's emotions fluctuated from shock to irritation to amusement in the 2 minutes it took Roger to give this little speech. Trust Chris's father to deliver the world's most tepid stamp of approval. You almost had to admire the guy. "Thank you," Nate said. "But with all due respect, there are a few things I want to clear up. One, Chris doesn't need anyone looking after her. I supported her and cared for her because I love her, but she would have done just fine on her own. Two, we may be from different worlds, but judging from what I heard yesterday, I'm not the only one in this room who's learned firsthand that love doesn't give a rat's ass, excuse my language, about where you live or how much money you have, or whether you think someone is well-suited. Plus, it'd be boring as shit, again, excuse my language, to be with someone who's exactly like you. Finally, while I appreciate and am humbled by your quasi-approval of our relationship, please believe me when I say there isn't jack shit you could do, say, or offer me that would keep me away from Chris. You're not allowing us to do anything. It's our decision whether we want to be together, hers and mine. I will always stand by her side, so unless she tires of me one day, I'm here to stay." Nate shrugged. "I'd say sorry, but I promised myself I wouldn't lie anymore." A stunned silence filled the kitchen. Nate was sure the other man would clock him in the face, but then Roger did something that shocked him even more than a sucker punch in the eye. He laughed, loud and hard, like it was the first time he'd laughed in years. "You've got balls, kid," Roger said when his amusement died down. "Which is good, because Carreras don't respect people without balls. But let me be clear, this is a one-time occurrence. Speak to me like that again, and I'll have my guy fix that pretty face of yours." Roger sounded more like a mafia don than a respected businessman, but Nate supposed there wasn't a huge difference between corporate bosses and mob bosses in the dog-eat-dog world of capitalism. He 100% believed Roger had a guy, and that said guy ran all manners of unsavory errands for his employer. Understood. Nate wasn't a pushover, but he wasn't an idiot, either. His phone lit up with yet another call from Marty. He'd put it on silent, but the flashing screen was almost as annoying as Smash Mouth's All-Star, the ringtone his cousin-slash-agent had programmed for just his calls, played on repeat. Are you going to get that? Roger raised his eyebrows. Your phone has been going off non-stop since I stepped into the kitchen. Even though Nate didn't have the energy to deal with Marty, he took Roger's advice. It was best to get the call over with so he could go back to worrying about how Chris's conversation with Gemma was going. Thank God! Marty yelled when Nate picked up. Where the hell have you been? I've been calling and calling and calling! Sorry, Nate interrupted the other man's litany of callings. I was busy. He shifted his weight from one foot to the other, hyper-aware of Roger's presence a mere 5 feet away, though Chris's father appeared engrossed in his own phone. He was frowning and tapping on that thing like it could predict stock prices for the next 50 years with 100% accuracy. Doing what? Marty demanded. Never mind. It's not important. What is important is what I'm about to tell you. Are you ready? Are you sitting down? Are you... Nate released a weary sigh. Just tell me. Fine. A dramatic pause, during which Nate could feel his patience stretching thin. You're on the short list for the Scott West film. Nate's eardrums rang from the volume of his agents, because Marty was acting as his agent right now, not his cousin. Excited yell. It was so loud it bled into the air surrounding Nate and caused Roger to look up. Did you hear me? Marty sounded breathless. You are on the motherfucking short list for a motherfucking Scott West film. You and three other guys. All relative unknowns, because this is West we're talking about. I've seen the other guys' reels. They ain't that good. You're much better, and I'm not just saying that because you're my cousin. You have a real shot at getting this, and then it's fucking A-list. No more auditions needed. Cover of Vanity Fair time, baby. Your callback is in 1 week, and... While Marty rambled on, alternating between logistics and wild dreams of the future, Nate struggled to catch his breath. He felt like he'd paddled out to sea on a calm day, only to get swept up in an unexpected tidal wave. He'd auditioned for the Scott West film a few days ago, but he hadn't expected much. He definitely hadn't expected to be shortlisted this quickly, or at all. Holy fucking shit. The import of this situation sank in. Nate's chances of starring in a Scott West film had gone from 1 in 1 million to 1 in 4. He had a 25% chance of getting everything he'd ever wanted, career-wise at least. After a lifetime of looking up at the stars, he was finally close enough to almost touch them. Almost wasn't the same as certainly, but it was a hell of a lot better than anything Nate had achieved so far. He was vaguely aware that Roger had disappeared in the past 10 minutes, but Nate didn't question where the other man went. He didn't do much except stand in dumbfounded silence, his heart racing, his palms sweating, and his mind whirling with a million thoughts and ideas and to-do items. Chris. Of all the people in the world, Nate wanted to share the news with her first. But she had enough going on right now. Nate paced in a small circle while Marty doled out dubious advice with a few gems mixed in. West himself will be there. Wear gray, it's his favorite color. I don't know why, because gray is depressing as hell, but any bit helps. He'd thought this summer would be like any other. Boy, had he been wrong. First he'd met Chris, and now this. His possible big break, which he'd learned about in the kitchen of the man who'd tried to pay him $50,000 to break up with his daughter. The same daughter, who just found out her mother wasn't really her mother, and that her real mother was her aunt, long presumed dead, who'd had an affair with her father. A laugh broke out of Nate's chest at the absurdity of it all. Somehow, when he wasn't looking, His life had turned into a movie.
Chapter 28. Chris had never noticed how loud clocks were. Tick, tock. Tick, tock. Tick, tock. She fisted her hands, resisting the urge to punch the library's stately grandfather clock in its noisy, ticking face. If she did that, the only sound left would be silence. Heavy, oppressive silence. The kind filled with secrets and things best left unspoken. Too bad Chris had never cared much for the way things should be left, best or not. She'd lived a lie her entire life, and she wanted the truth, the entire truth, right now. How did you find me? Her sharp question severed the thick wordlessness between herself and Gemma. She frowned before shaking her head and clarifying her question. At Alchemy, you were always there. Was it a coincidence, or did you know I'd be there? Gemma twisted her hands in her lap, looking like a nervous schoolgirl. There were echoes of Chris in her features. The eyes, the slant of her cheekbones, the shape of her nose. Now that Chris knew they were biologically mother and daughter, she couldn't believe she'd never noticed the resemblance before. Inanely, she realized her father hadn't lied when he'd told her growing up that he and her mother had been a love match. Except said mother wasn't the woman Chris thought she was. Literally. I knew. It came out as a whisper. Gemma coughed and said in a clearer voice, after I received Mariana's letter, I heeded her wishes and left you and your father alone. I wanted to keep an eye on you from afar, just to see how you were doing and feel like I was a part of your life in a way. But I resisted. I was afraid if I saw you, I would give in to the temptation to talk to you. I was selfish, running away from my family like that and putting them through the grief of thinking I was dead, even if I thought it was justified. And I considered not knowing you my penance. You already had a mother, I thought. You didn't need me. Until, Chris's pulse thrummed in warning. Until what? Mariana came to see me, Gemma said. 3 years ago. The blood rushed to Chris's face. 3 years ago. Her mother, or the woman she thought was her mother, had been alive all this time, and apparently well enough to seek out her sister. Even if Mariana wasn't Chris's biological mom, she was family. She'd promised to look after Chris and had raised her for the first 2 years of her life, until she'd abandoned her. Not only that, she'd warned Gemma to stay away, ensuring Chris would grow up without a mother figure. Chris hated a lot of things. Waiting in line, cheap knockoffs, assholes who cut her off on the freeway, serial killers and rapists. But in that moment, she'd never hated anyone as much as she hated Mariana. What did she say? Chris sounded wooden to her own ears. She was sick. Cancer. When she sought me out, she was on borrowed time, and she wanted to make amends. Gemma's gaze dropped, her eyes suspiciously watery. Chris, your mother, your aunt, Mariana. She stumbled over the phrasing, apparently unsure how to refer to Chris's relationship with Mariana now that the truth was out. She wasn't the only one. You have to understand. She wasn't a bad person. She was my sister, and I loved her. But she could be selfish, entitled. She was the greatest beauty in our town, and everyone did whatever she asked because she was so beautiful and smart and charming. The only time she didn't get what she wanted was when it came to love. She was in love with Antonio, the local fisherman's son, but she couldn't be with him because she was promised to Roger. It was her one unselfish act, giving up on the love of her life to be with your father for our mother's sake. She knew Roger didn't love her either, and that made things worse. It stung her pride. The one thing Mariana held in higher esteem than anything else was her pride. When she lost her baby, the one thing she had left that was hers and Antonio's, and found out her husband had a baby with her sister, well, she was furious. Gemma's face twisted with grief, regret, and sorrow. I don't blame her for her anger. I never did. She was right to be upset. And I was so grateful she agreed to raise you as her own. You deserved a healthy, whole family. And I thought that's what you were getting. But Mariana, she hesitated. She never got over the fact that you weren't really her baby. When she came to see me years ago, she admitted that every time she looked at you, she was reminded of Rogers and my affair. But for all her anger, she was loyal to me. She thought I was dead, and she pushed aside her hurt out of respect for my memory. Once I contacted her, though, all that anger came rushing back. I saw hints of it even during our first reunion. She was furious with the situation, and especially with me, for living life on my terms, free of cares and responsibilities. It wasn't true, but that was what she thought, and she resented me for it. She wanted me to pay, which was why she sent me that letter, alleging Roger wanted nothing to do with me. She also couldn't stay. She said she couldn't bear pretending to be in a happy family any longer. Not when every day with you and your father reminded her of what she'd lost. So she left. It was a punishment for those she'd felt had wronged her. Including me. Chris curled her hands into fists until her nails dug into her palms. She couldn't breathe, her brain spinning with a velocity that stole the oxygen from her lungs. It was too much. A lifetime's worth of secrets and revelations dumped on her in the space of 48 hours. And that wasn't counting her conversation with her father earlier, when he'd explained why he had gone looking for her at Alchemy and why Gloria wasn't around. No, not you, Gemma looked horrified. Me and Roger. We were the ones who'd wronged her. You were just a baby. One she couldn't stand, Chris set her jaw. But you and Daddy weren't the only ones in the wrong. She cheated too. She had a baby with another man. We couldn't blame her for that, Gemma said, her eyes heavy with guilt, with penance. The three of us, we all wronged each other in our own ways. But ultimately, we loved people we shouldn't have loved. She didn't do what she did out of love. She did it out of spite. Chris hadn't known Mariana. Not really. She'd built the woman up in her mind all these years because she figured there had to be a good reason why she'd abandoned her family. Perhaps Mariana had been kidnapped or suffered an accident that caused amnesia. The timing didn't quite make sense, but a daughter would grasp onto anything that painted her mother in a good light. She did, Gemma said honestly. I won't lie and say what she did. Abandoning you and Roger like that without a word wasn't selfish and hurtful beyond measure. She ran away instead of dealing with her issues, and she took her anger out on an innocent child. She created a new life for herself in New Orleans, under a new name, with no thought to the lives she'd left behind. But this wasn't so different from what I did, and when she asked for my forgiveness, I gave it to her. Chris noticed Gemma spoke of her sister in the past tense. She knew the answer, but she asked anyway. Did she beat the cancer? The grief deepened and etched itself into the contours of Gemma's face. No. She died 6 months after we met. She'd planned on visiting you and Roger, too. but I think she thought what she did was beyond redemption. Plus, her condition deteriorated rapidly, and she became too sick to travel. So, you knew the truth for years, and you didn't say a word. Bright, piercing hurt flared in Chris's chest. If you hadn't run into my dad at the cafe, I would have never found out the truth. I'm your daughter. Your biological daughter. She blinked back the moisture gathering in her eyes. How could you stay away for so long? Didn't you know how much I needed a mom? Chris had thought she'd outgrown the need for a mother after she turned 18. But in reality, no one ever outgrew their need for a mother. Oh, honey. Tears welled up in Gemma's eyes, and she rushed to embrace Chris, who instinctively turned away. Torn between twin desires to throw herself into her mother's arms and to make her suffer the way she'd suffered the past 21 years. Gemma fell back, but the tears tracked down her face without abandon. You're right. I'm sorry. To tell you the truth, I was terrified of showing up after so long. I wasn't sure how you or your father would react, and a part of me wanted to hold on to fantasies of what could be instead of deal with the reality of what would be. That was on me, and I am so sorry. But I did hire a private investigator to check up on you. She bit her lip. That sounds creepy, but I wanted to make sure you were okay. I found out your father started dating a woman named Gloria, that you'd gone abroad to Shanghai for a year, and that you would be in L.A. for the summer. He told me you stopped in Alchemy a lot, so I started showing up, hoping to run into you, trying to figure out what I'd say once I did, especially with your father getting married soon. Gemma drew in a deep breath. I was going to tell you, I swear. But your father showed up and, well, a helpless shrug. It wasn't how I wanted to break it to you. But I'm not sorry, you know. Like you said, I should have reached out a long time ago. Chris stared at the grandfather clock, taking in its elaborately carved reeded columns and polished brass pendulum while she debated where to go from here. She was furious at everyone. At Mariana for being so selfish and vindictive. At her father for lying all these years about her real mother. At Gemma for not reaching out sooner. But they'd already wasted decades. Did she want to waste more time being upset over the past? If this had happened at the beginning of the summer, she would have thrown a tantrum and given her father and Gemma the cold shoulder for weeks, if not months. But now, after everything that had happened, after meeting Nate and realizing the importance of every second spent together, she couldn't bring herself to lash out. It would take her time to digest everything, and she wasn't ready to call Gemma mom yet, but she was willing to give her a chance, see where it went. My dad isn't getting married to Gloria, Chris said. Ever. Gemma's brows lowered. But I thought, this November. He ended it the day he came to the cafe. Satisfaction blossomed in Chris's stomach, as beautiful and long-awaited as a night-blooming flower. The sudden death of her father's relationship with Gloria was the one unequivocally bright spot in this tangled mess. He found out she was cheating on him. Chris thought Gloria was smart enough not to carry on an affair right under Roger's nose, especially before she'd sealed the matrimonial deal. Apparently, she'd overestimated the step monster's intelligence. According to Roger, he'd found a burner phone filled with explicit texts and pictures between Gloria and her personal trainer. The step monster had denied it, but the proof was in the pudding. She'd been cheating on Roger for at least a month. Roger, who'd already been suspicious after Chris's claims, and who had not appreciated Gloria's lack of concern over her soon-to-be stepdaughter's welfare over the past few days, had dumped her on the spot. He'd gotten Chris's whereabouts from Teague and showed up at Alchemy to apologize, only to run into Gemma. The rest was history. Oh, Gemma sucked in a breath. Oh, didn't your PI tell you? No, the other woman said, looking dazed. I ended our contract after I came to LA and saw you for the first time. I wanted to get to know you myself, not get the information secondhand. Chris swallowed the lump in her throat. Maybe, she said slowly, we could have a real coffee date next week and start the whole getting to know each other process. It would take time to heal the wounds of the past, but Chris was going to focus on the present and future instead of bygones. There was no use dwelling on things she couldn't change. Gemma's eyes shimmered as her mouth curved up into a hopeful smile. I'd like that. I'd like that a lot. Chapter 29. 1 week later.
That was only 70% awkward, which was better than I expected, Nate mused. I think in a few years we can knock it down to 50.
Chris rolled her eyes and bumped her hip against his. Don't be a smartass.
Come on, you're telling me you weren't expecting another bombshell or three to drop during dinner?
He had a point. They'd just finished dinner with Roger and Gemma in Koreatown. LA had some of the best Korean food in the country. And Chris had been waiting for yet another box of secrets to spill for the entire meal. Luckily, nothing unusual happened. Except when one of the other patrons recognized Nate from his 3-episode guest arc on a popular crime show a few years ago. The woman, clearly a tourist, had asked for a picture and an autograph, which Nate delighted in giving. It'd been his first ever autograph. Fine. You're right. This time, Chris conceded. They entered the boba shop near their dinner spot. She was stuffed from Korean barbecue, but she could always make room for bubble tea. Did I tell you Gemma's moving to Seattle? She's an artist, so she can work anywhere. She won't be living with us, but she'll be close by. My dad already told his assistant to have his travel days going forward. Chris flashed back to her and her father's conversation in his office last week.
I didn't think about how my absence affected you, and I'm sorry, Roger said,
weariness and regret evident on his strong, proud features.
You've always been so independent, and I never expected business to take off the way it did after you were born. It's no excuse, but I honestly thought working long hours and providing for you was the right thing to do.
I am independent. Chris rubbed her thumb over a tiny chip on one of her nails. She'd have to get that fixed later. But it'd be nice to feel like I'm part of a family, a real one. Like, we don't have to eat dinner together every night, but maybe once a month or something. That seemed like a fair compromise. Up to this point, Chris and her father had shared maybe 3-4 meals together in a calendar year. She didn't count events or dinners with her father's friends and business associates, which were basically work gatherings disguised as social get-togethers.
Counteroffer, Roger said.
Chris sighed, recognizing her father's negotiation voice. Proceed. His mouth quirked up in a small smile before he grew serious again.
Dinner once a week, when we're both in the city. Flexible days to account for our unpredictable schedules. And, he paused, I'll cut back my business travel to 180 days each year, max.
Chris's mouth parted in shock. Roger's terms were the equivalent of her willingly giving up her Porsche convertible in Seattle and her favorite limited edition hand-painted Dior handbag. From dinner once a quarter to once a week? That was a lot. But as she gazed at the man with whom she'd lived all her life, but whom she didn't really know, she surmised, once a week might be perfect after all. Daily would be too much. Biweekly or monthly, too little. Trust Roger to strike the ideal balance on his first try. Deal, she said, as long as neither of us has to cook.
That's great, Nate squeezed Chris's hand. You deserve to get to know your parents, especially your mom, better.
It'll be a long time before I call her mom. It's too strange, but one day, maybe. Chris still needed to work through her feelings about Mariana. Even though the woman wasn't her biological mother and had been a part of her life for only 2 years, she'd lived in Chris's heart and imagination for far longer than that. Roger, too, needed to work through his grief. Chris imagined that while he hadn't loved Mariana the way he loved Gemma, his complicated feelings toward his ex-wife mirrored her own. Gemma had told him about Mariana's death and why she'd left all those years ago, and his reaction had been a similar mix of shock, anger, and sadness, peppered with guilt. It would take time for the Carreras to heal from their past, but they'd get there. Meanwhile, Chris and Gemma took tentative steps toward building a relationship and crammed in a coffee date, a shopping date, and a spa day together in 1 week. Chris was pleased to discover that Gemma had excellent taste in footwear, agreed that deep tissue massages were better than Swedish massages, and harbored an everlasting love for teen movies from the 2000s, including the iconic Mean Girls, All Hail Regina George, and Bring It On, despite the irritating perkiness of Kirsten Dunst's character. How are things with your dad? Chris asked after they placed their boba tea orders.
Sim, Nate raked a hand through his hair. I mean, in the sense that we're working through our issues and taking it day by day. It's getting easier, though, and Skye's happy.
Good. I'll miss her, Chris admitted.
Really? Who else will you miss?
She picked up their boba from the counter and handed Nate his drink while shooting him a sardonic look. You were the world's most obvious fisher.
I don't know what you mean. It was just a question.
His mouth curved with mischief. Chris smirked. But a tangle of dread knotted itself in her throat. It was Saturday night. Her flight left for Seattle Monday morning, and classes started Tuesday. They had a little over 24 hours left together. Thanks to the whole Gemma drama, it had been easy to push thoughts of her and Nate's imminent goodbye to the side. But there was no denying it. Their time together was running out. And Chris, who'd never been the sentimental sort, was devastated. Her father had reinstated her access to her cards and bank accounts, but she'd kept her job at Alchemy until Nate's co-worker with the sprained ankle returned to work on Thursday. She had, however, moved back into her family's house after Roger kicked Gloria to the curb. Nate, Skylar, and even Michael had insisted she was welcome to stay through the end of the summer. While Chris would have loved the extra time with Nate, she didn't want to impose any further, even if she had been paying rent. Besides, she and Nate spent every night together anyway. She either slept over at his place or he slept over at hers. Usually hers, given she had her own wing of the house and they could make as much noise as they wanted without worrying about someone hearing them. That's not a conversation for tonight, she said, as they stepped back out into the muggy evening. Later. Like, in the next century. Chris didn't want to say goodbye to Nate. Ever. His face softened.
Chris.
You bitch! Chris's straw froze halfway to her mouth. She narrowed her eyes at the speaker and wiped the surprise from her face when she saw it was Gloria. What the hell was she doing here? The ex-stepmonster flaunted head-to-toe designer, but her red hair was messier than usual, and dark circles shadowed her eyes. She stood on the edge of the sidewalk, glaring at Chris and Nate, her hands strangling the strap of her handbag. It was sort of sad. I'm sorry, do I know you? Chris asked. You kind of look like someone who tried to weasel her way past a prenup and into my father's millions, but was dumb enough to cheat on him with her personal trainer, of all people. Talk about cliché. She took a loud, purposeful slurp of her taro bubble tea. Anyway, you can't be her, because while she was a total bitch, she had the decency not to wear Louboutins from 3 seasons ago. Gloria's lips flattened into a thin line. You think you're so smart. Once your father finds out what you did, and he will find out, he'll never forgive you. It seems your memory is degraded as much as your fashion sense, Chris said coolly. My father already knows about the contract with Nate. I'm not talking about that, Gloria hissed. I'm talking about the bogus phone with the texts and pictures. I don't know how you got your hands on those photos, but your efforts to frame me are pathetic. Chris's brows drew together. Call her crazy, but Gloria sounded like she was telling the truth about the phone. Either that or she was a world-class actress. Chris wouldn't put it past the other woman. It's not my fault you weren't more careful, she said, watching Gloria's reaction closely. Plus, considering the wedding is off and my father wants nothing to do with you, I'd say my alleged efforts aren't so pathetic. Gloria's cheeks flushed until their color matched her hair. Part of Chris was tempted to taunt the ex-step monster further, but honestly, she was over it. The woman was out of her and her father's lives, and she had little desire to waste more of her precious remaining time in L.A. battling a defeated opponent. Since you're still here in L.A., I assume you've either been shacking up with your trainer or staying at a hotel in hopes of getting my father alone and making him change his mind. Friendly tip, he won't, so stop wasting your money. I also assume, given your appearance here tonight, that you've been following him or me. Again, stop wasting your money and time and move on. We have, Chris smiled. Have a nice life. She tugged Nate down the street, leaving a speechless, sputtering Gloria behind.
Perhaps we should walk faster in case she snaps and tries to mace us, Nate whispered.
Good idea.
Chris waited until they rounded the corner before she broke into a run and a laugh, with Nate close on her heels.
She'd stewed in resentment and hate for so long, she hadn't realized how much they weighed her down until she was freed of them. She was still laughing when they reached his car, and she replayed Gloria's stunned expression in her mind. There was, however, one thing she wanted to confirm. Nate? He pulled out of their parking space and onto the main road. You know anything about the allegedly bogus phone? She'd been focused on Gloria during the confrontation, but she'd noticed Nate's mouth quirk up at that line.
Nope.
There went that mouth quirk again.
Why would I?
Chris tapped her perfectly manicured nails on the car door armrest. Too bad. I had a fun reward in mind if you had. She shrugged. Oh, well.
What kind of reward?
Suspicion tempered Nate's tone. Like he was sure he was walking into a trap, but couldn't help himself. She smiled sweetly. Did I ever tell you I have basically no gag reflex? She'd given him BJs before, of course, but she'd been saving that fun little tidbit for a special occasion. The car swerved to the right before Nate corrected it.
No, he wheezed.
Well, I don't, Chris feigned a yawn. I used to experiment with all sorts of things to see if they'd trigger the reflex. Bananas, cucumbers, carrots. But nope, I can take them all. Nate's grip tightened on the steering wheel until his knuckles turned white.
Are you trying to get us killed? He growled.
No, Chris upped the saccharin in her smile. I'm trying to get to the bottom of this bogus phone deal.
You don't play fair.
Fairness is for losers. Nate huffed out a laugh.
Fine.
He glanced at her quickly before refocusing on the road.
I planted the phone with Reese's help. Turns out she's not a big fan of Gloria. Said something about Gloria insulting her roasted chicken and making off-color comments. Plus, she likes me and felt bad about what happened between you and her father. Anyway, She caught Gloria and her trainer arguing one day when Roger was out of the house. From what she could tell, they really had been hooking up. But Gloria broke things off after Roger arrived and the trainer was pissed. She'd been ignoring his calls, so he showed up at the house and Gloria freaked. Risa didn't catch any of this on camera, but she called me.
Wait, Chris held up her hand. Why does she have your number? And why did she call you instead of me?
We bonded over her banana bread, and she knew you were already in trouble for our earlier scheme, so she didn't want to drag you into another mess.
You exchanged numbers because of banana bread?
Nate shot her a slightly affronted look. Yes, that's very good banana bread, but that's not the point. The point is, she called and told me. We didn't try to wait for evidence again because we didn't have time, so I asked Teague for help. Apparently, he's an amateur hacker. The guy has way too many hobbies. And he doctored the messages and included a few photos that were on Gloria's real phone's camera roll. Not naked photos, just suggestive ones that go with the fake messages. Because we couldn't find any actual messages between her and her trainer.
Chris was speechless. It was happening more and more frequently, and she wasn't sure she liked it, but this. That is so underhanded and evil. I love it. Then she frowned. Wait, Teague helped you? When did you speak with Teague?
A sheepish expression took over Nate's face. I may have looked up his contact info and paid him a visit to talk.
To talk?
Yes.
About what?
About him never touching you again unless he wanted me to break his fingers, Nate said casually.
Nate Reynolds!
The guilt morphed into a smirk. He got the message. He's not so bad, as long as he's not touching you.
Chris groaned. You're insufferable. He's my friend.
He can be your friend without pawing you like he did at Sky's soccer game.
We'll discuss this later. The conversation is not over. But there was a more pressing issue at hand. Why would you, Risa, and Teague do that? Help me with Gloria, I mean. Nate, she understood. But Teague had no dog in the fight. And while she and Risa were on good terms, they weren't friends or anything. Plus, if Risa got caught, she'd be out of a job. To think they'd gone to all this trouble to get rid of Gloria for her. It was unfathomable.
Because we love you, Nate said. Okay, I think Risa did it out of hate for Gloria, proving you should never, ever insult a woman's food or, you know, make racist jokes. But Teague is your friend and I'm your boyfriend. Who loves you most, he added, just so you know. I'm up here and everyone else is down here. He punctuated his explanation with the appropriate hand gestures. Gloria was right when she said the phone and messages were bogus. But you really had been cheating on your dad. You'd been on the right track with your plan. But since it fell through, I figured I'd pick up where you left off. I just didn't tell you since I wanted you to have plausible deniability if it blew up in our faces.
Chris's stomach fluttered in a way that was possibly unhealthy. Some girls swooned over roses. Some girls swooned over jewelry. But Chris? She swooned over guys who hatched diabolical plans to get rid of evil stepmothers-to-be. Pull over, she said. Nate looked alarmed.
We're on the freeway.
Take the nearest exit and pull into the first empty parking lot or side street you find. Something in her voice must have gotten to him, because he did as she asked with no further protest. 15 minutes later, they parked in the lot of a closed shopping mall.
Are you okay? Nate asked, concern etched on his face. Do you? Oh, fuck.
He hissed out a breath when Chris made a quick work of his belt and zipper and freed his hardening cock.
What are you doing?
His voice had dropped several decibels and was strained beyond belief. She flashed a mischievous smile. I'm giving you your reward. Then she showed him exactly what a girl with no gag reflex could do.
Chapter 30. Nate discovered there was a downside to getting the best blowjob of his life in his car. He could no longer drive without getting hard. Every time he got behind the wheel, he pictured Chris's head bobbing up and down on its cock and bam, instant hard-on. "You've ruined me," he said, feeding her another strawberry and watching with interest as a trickle of juice slid down her chin. "I'm going to have to constantly take care of myself in my car now. If I get pulled over by the cops for lewd behavior, it's your fault." Chris swallowed the fruit and laughed. "I'm sorry. I'll make it up to you."
"How?"
"Lots of phone and cyber sex?"
Nate thought about it.
"That works." He leaned forward and slowly licked the juice off her chin before he moved his mouth up and grazed his teeth over her bottom lip. He'd borrowed his friend Will's boat again for their last night together in L.A. It only seemed fitting considering this was where their official romance began. Hell, at this point, the vessel held so much sentimentality for Nate he'd buy it from Will if he had the money. "I'm going to miss how you taste," he murmured. "I should eat my fill tonight. Enough to last me for another month." After that, it was going to be him, his hand, and Chris's voice, if he was lucky. Depressing as hell, but better than nothing. He'd take Chris any way he could get her. If that meant long stretches of lonely nights until the next time he could see her, then so be it.
"Only if I get to feast too,"
Chris said, her voice hoarser than usual. "You drive a hard bargain." Nate traced circles on her inner thigh with his thumb. "Okay. Unlimited feasting tonight for both of us. Phone sex every hour, cyber sex every day, and one of us visits the other at least once every 3 months." Once every 3 months wasn't nearly enough, not when he wanted to be with her every second of every day, but it made sense, given their schedules.
"Nate!"
Amusement twinkled in her eyes, and he ate that shit up like candy. He loved seeing Chris like this, unguarded, her joy and zest for life shining through the walls she'd erected around herself. He knew very few people had the privilege of witnessing this side of her, and he wasn't taking it for granted.
"If we have phone sex every hour, we'd do nothing else."
"I fail to see the problem. Also, I might remind you, you promised me, and I quote, lots of phone and cyber sex." Chris's mouth twitched.
"Fine, phone sex twice a week and cyber sex once a week."
"What? That's not a lot," Nate grumbled. "I feel cheated, gypped, robbed." She rolled her eyes, but her laughter sparkled in the night air.
"We don't want it to lose its magic. If we had cyber sex every day, don't you think we'd get bored?"
"Not at all." He heaved a deep sigh. "But fine, I agree to your terms." He swept his palm down the length of her thigh and gently squeezed her knee. "Honestly, I'd take anything. Phone slash cyber sex or no. I'm just happy to be with you, even if we're not together physically." God, that was sappy, but Nate meant every word. Yes, he loved having sex with Chris, but if he had to choose between sex with her for a short while and no sex but a lifetime by her side, he'd choose the lifetime option. No question. Chris's eyes, mouth, and body softened all at once until she was melting into him, her curves pressed against his, her gaze locked on his own.
"We're really doing this, huh?"
"Yeah." Nate's mouth tipped up. "A long-distance relationship. We're going to kick its ass." He'd never been one to turn down a challenge. He was a fighter, so was Chris. They were going to make this L.A.-Seattle thing work come hell or high water. Besides, Chris only had 1 year of school left. After that, who knew? They hadn't discussed her post-graduation plans yet, but Nate hoped she'd return to L.A. for good.